there's different things that different people get from their and. It's just, don't be afraid to use them in the office. And if you're in a leadership position, don't be afraid to find out what those are so then you can allow your people to use them.
All right, gang, we are back at it. We're out of our turkey coma and ready for episode number 123 of Future Proof. I'm Bill Sheridan. So glad you're here. Thanks for joining us, by the way. Things get a little, surreal on the show this week. Worlds are kind of colliding. Wrinkles are opening in the space-time continuum. It's not that bad, but it is a little bit of a different show this week. I'll tell you what I mean in just a minute. First, let's start with this. This week's show is sponsored, as always, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors, unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Now, onto the surreal nature of this week's show. So, think back to like the last piece of really huge breaking news you saw. I'm talking, you know, disaster level type breaking news. Like the Boston Marathon bombing comes to mind for me as kind of a perfect example of this, right? There's the initial event and all the reporting that goes on from that. And from a news standpoint, to tell that story, it lasts, 30 minutes or so to get the basic facts of the story out, you know? And then you get to the point where the reporters start interviewing witnesses or first responders or city officials, people who either saw something or are in charge of something, right? And that can last, you know, a while, an hour, maybe 90 minutes. And then you get to the point where reporters start interviewing each other because they've officially run out of stuff to report on. So how does all of that apply to this week's show? I think we've come to a saturation point with podcasts. Don't you think? I mean, come on. Everybody has one these days, right? Here's proof. These are stats from podcastinsights.com. As of October 2020, the answer to the question, how many podcasts are there, stands at about 1.5 million. And those podcasts have produced a cumulative 34 million episodes. So, you know, and that growth, by the way, is exponential. According to Apple, there were about 550,000 podcasts in 2018. So, okay, now, sure, not all of those podcasts are currently active, right? Of the 1.5 million existing podcasts, slightly more than half are currently active, meaning they're producing new episodes as we speak, right? So let's see, what else? About 55% of the U.S. population has listened to a podcast, 37% of them monthly, 24% of them weekly, right? So yeah, we're on podcast overload right now. And my point to all this is, you know, like that piece of breaking news we talked about earlier where the reporters start interviewing each other this week. I'm interviewing another podcaster. That's where we are in the podcast world right now. But hear me out on this one, because this is not as lame as it sounds. Okay, two podcasters interviewing each other. My guest is not just another podcaster. He is John Garrett. He is a CPA, yes, but he's also an author and a stand-up comedian and an Emmy Award nominee and a thought provoker. He's a lot of stuff besides just a CPA, right? And that's the point of this conversation. What we do isn't who we are. We're all something more than our job, right? I mean, I pray that my tombstone doesn't end up reading communications professional on it, right? In the end, that would suck. So what's that thing that we are? What's that thing that defines us, right? That's our life's journey. And that's John's mission as well. He says he is on a mission to, quote, create better workplaces by asking his audience, what's your and? Through hilarious stories and extensive research, he organizes teams to share their hobbies and passions at work because they comprise the very heart of their organization's culture, which I think is freaking awesome, right? And John's written a book about this very thing. It's called What's Your And? Unlock the Person Within the Professional. And it's a you know, it's a great piece of reading. He interviews professionals from all walks of life, but he identifies them in a really unique way by kind of connecting them to their and, right? Not their job, but that thing that they connect with on a deeper level. So for instance, he interviews Andrew Logan in the book, who he identifies as a Harley Davidson rider, right? Not a professional, but a Harley Davidson rider. And then there's Tony Nitti, a tax expert I've spoken to a couple of times on this podcast, and whom John identifies as a mountain biker and backcountry skier. And there's Brooks Mortensen, who's identified as a French horn player, right? Get it? We are not our job. We're people, and we are the things we're passionate about. And don't get me wrong. I love my job. I love the people I work with, but I wouldn't describe that as my passion, right? I think most of you might be in the same boat too. And that's the point of John's book. And it's a great read. It asks a really important question. Who are we in the end, right? Because your and, that thing that you are besides your job, that's most likely who you are. So my question to you this week is, what's your and? And my guest is going to explore that question with me. Here's how he puts it in his book. He says, quote, "You are so much more than your job title. You're a professional and something else. You may also be an artist, a cyclist, a baker, a volunteer, a musician, and the list goes on. It's time that we all start to recognize this, because ignoring your and makes you less successful and less professional. And it also makes your organization less successful," end quote. So here we are. Let's explore our ands, shall we? Yours and mine. And here to help us do that this week is John Garrett. So John, what is it about accounting and comedy? I mean, you're the third CPA that I've interviewed here who also moonlights as a stand-up comedian. So is there something going on in accounting somewhere that I'm not aware of? I mean,
Well, I think there's a lot going on in accounting that people are doing that no one's talking about. And for me, it just was stand-up comedy. Yeah. You know, there's Greg Kite, there's Jonathan Krafcik, there's a lot of sketch comedians out there that do the improv side. But there's also people that ride motorcycles and like to paint and do a 5K walk for charity. So there's a lot of things that are happening outside of work that unfortunately people aren't encouraged to share or encouraged to talk about. And so it's always amazing when people are surprised and I'm like, well, what do you think we're doing with the rest of our time? Like reading FASBs? Right. Like, what the hell? There's other stuff to do, you know?
Yeah. It's funny how life works that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just getting back to what you do, I mean, what's been your biggest thrill as a comedian so far?
Well, I mean, as a comedian, gosh, I mean, opening for the band Train in front of more people than are in my hometown. Oh, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, I mean, working with Louis Anderson and Atlantic City at the Borgata and also a couple other resorts. I mean, you know, getting to meet Seinfeld, hanging out with Jay Leno. I mean, like cool stuff like that, but also just, you know, living in New York City for almost 10 years and just, you know, being on at 1 a.m. In front of a crowd that's all from Norway. And I'm like, I'm all out of fjord jokes. Like, I don't know what to talk to you about, you know? And so, you know, just all the spectrum of the things, but really I think that what transcends it all from the very beginning of when I first started to, you know, even today is just, you know, people's lives, we're going through a lot. And so if I'm able to be a little piece of you forgetting about that and just laughing and mostly at me, then I'm okay with that, you know? And if we can just make each other's lives just a little bit better, you know, for my little piece of the time, then, you know, I think that's cool.
How are you doing that during a pandemic? I mean, obviously there's no crowds, there's no, you know, live stand up right now, but how are you scratching that niche right now?
Right. And actually, so I haven't done comedy clubs for several years because now that I've transferred over to more of the consulting and corporate speaking side. Mm-hmm. So I don't really do the comedy clubs anymore. I got my reps in there, been on stage over 2000 times. So whenever I go on stage for the, you know, but even for the corporate speaking, you know, it's a similar animal. It's, you know, being in front of a live audience and still making them laugh. And so, you know, it's some of it's doing the virtual stuff, but it's totally different. I mean, the virtual is, you know, because I'm giving things and saying things that are funny and then you don't get any response back.
Right.
And so it's exhausting. It's emotionally exhausting. It's mentally exhausting. It's,
yeah.
I mean, just, it's just terrible. And so, you know, so creating some music video parodies, those are always fun, you know, doing things that are, not necessarily live, but, still humorous. I also hosted a CEO forum conference, for like 800 CEOs, and coming out of the break did kind of a, almost a Saturday Night Live, live sketch about being a CEO and how they need a CEO buddy because there's it's lonely at the top and and all this stuff. And so it was just so there's creative ways that you can still be real legit funny and corporate clean. And and that's what I bet if you interview those 800 CEOs, one of the top three things that they're going to remember from that conference is CEO buddy. And it serves no purpose. It's not even a real thing, you know?
But and so, yeah, that's just something that they wouldn't normally hear at a function.
Exactly.
That's very exactly. Cool. So listen, congratulations on the book, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
What's Your And? And I love kind of the double meaning behind the title, you know, a sly nod to improvisational comedy, but also the fact that all of these folks that you've interviewed on your podcast and that you write about in the book, and you've identified them as, you know, not as accountant or CPA, but rather, for instance, marathoner or adventure photographer, or French horn player, or theater director. I mean, you know, it just kind of points that notion that our jobs are not our lives, right? And which is the point that I take away from all that anyway. Where did this theme kind of come from for you?
Yeah, well, it started, I was speaking at an AICPA conference probably 5 or 6 years ago, and I was about to go on stage, 900 people, and I'm minutes away from going on stage. I'm just kind of going over, you know, last mental thoughts, and the meeting professional comes up and says, "Hey, do you know Mark?" And I'll take his last name out, and I was like, "No, I've never heard that name in my life." And she goes, "Well, he knows you. He saw all the people speaking at the conference," and right away goes, "I know John Garrett. That's the guy who did Comedy at Night." And I'm like, "Who the hell is this Rain Man? Like, how does he even know me? And like, do I owe him $50? Like, why does he know my name?" And so I started, I'm on stage, I'm speaking, but the whole B-roll in my brain is, who is this guy? Like, why does he know me? How do I not know his name? Like, what is happening? So I get off stage, I go do my homework. He was in my first PwC office, and I left that office 12 years before that.
Oh my God.
And he's in the tax department. And I don't know how taxes work. So I never worked with him. I never met him. I didn't even go to his floor, like ever. He was four floors above me in the PwC office in St. Louis. And so I was like, I never met this guy. And yet I'm on a short list of people that he remembered 12 years later, and it wasn't for anything work related. Yeah. And I had a pretty strong resume. And so it's like, all right, well, am I the only one that had a hobby? Because it's easy to remember one person.
Right.
But then I started talking to people, and you find out that, oh no, I like to adventure photography, or I play the French horn in the symphony, or, you know, just on the side. Do you make money at it? Who cares? No. You know, are you good at it? It also, who cares? You know, it's just, that's what I enjoy doing. And you start to find out like, no, almost all of us have something a passion we have outside of work, but no one's talking about it. And so that's where this all started, was the stereotypical professional, the stereotypical accountant even is not what we thought. You know, it's not the person that just sits in the corner with the green eye shades and, you know, just loves accounting 24/7 and eats and breathes accounting and can't just stop talking about accounting. It's like, no, it's the opposite of that. You know, in my research, it's 92% of us have a hobby or a passion we do outside of work. So share it, talk about it. I mean, that's actually your true differentiator, because everyone else in the accounting profession has an accounting degree and probably passed a CPA exam. Yes, those are all hard and important, but that just got you a seat at the table. Right. Like, welcome, here's the other million of us. And so it's like, oh, so I'm not any different than anyone else. Yeah. But then all of a sudden you start to share those outside of work passions, those ands, if you will, because, you know, you're an accountant and something else. No one cares about the first part. Like, even other accountants, like literally.
And it's kind of funny how, I mean, you know, we're always told by keynote speaker after keynote speaker after keynote speaker, right? You got to do what you love to do, right? You got to find work that is
right.
You absolutely love to do. And how many of us are actually lucky enough to do that, right? Very few of us.
Exactly.
So we need that. We need that second part. We need that and, you know, to kind of fuel our passions, right?
Right. It's not an or. Exactly. It's not an or. You're a bunch of things, you know, and you know, so it's not accountant or cyclist. No, you can be both.
Yeah.
And you know, and then, you know, if you're able to take that energy and that enthusiasm and talk about it at work and bring it to work and shine a light on it at work, then, you know, work becomes a little more fun because you're hanging out with people that do cool things and that are also genuinely interested in you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's important.
How many of these interviews have you done now?
Oh, for the podcast, well, there's 400 something episodes. Wow. So yeah, quite a few. And it's cool because it transcends even beyond accounting. It's lawyers and engineers. For the engineers, I got to talk slower. You know how it is. But no, I'm just kidding. No, but like architects and bankers and all kinds of people. So it's really fascinating how the message is much bigger than what I thought.
So 400 plus interviews. I mean, what's been the most kind of inspirational, motivating story you've heard over the years? Which are there any that really stand out above the others?
You know, I mean, they're all cool. That's the thing is like, it's almost, I would imagine if somebody had a bunch of children, which one's your favorite? It's like, well, it depends on what are we talking about? You know, I've had some people that are, you know, held the land speed record for vintage motorcycle racing and like on the Salt Flats. And she has a consulting firm in Chicago, also was a backup dancer for Prince's Purple Rain music video. That's awesome. And it's like, how would you know that unless you just asked, like, what do you love to do outside of work? You know? But then there's also, you know, a woman in Georgia who makes kombucha and, you know, just for fun and just likes to make kombucha. And it's like, okay, awesome. And like has it down to a science for, you know, what she likes and, you know, and all kinds of people that just do these things because it's what lights them up. Mm-hmm. And it's just cool to hear it because you can hear it in the tone of their voice. And when you're in person, their eyes get big, they're animated, you know, and when they're talking about accounting, rarely that, you know, they're not as in, I mean, sometimes they are, but yeah. Sometimes they aren't. But when they're talking about your and, you're always lit up about it. You know, and that's cool for people to be able to share and to see that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, my boss refers to it as like bucket fillers, filling her bucket, you know, which he uses this analogy where you come to work and a lot of times folks are taking stuff out of your bucket, scooping water
out,
it's just draining, right? And so you need that thing that is going to fill your bucket again, right? And
yeah, absolutely.
That's what you're talking about here for a lot of folks.
Yeah, yeah. And if you could fill your bucket at work, then bonus, mm-hmm. you know, by talking about it or sharing it or maybe even using it some ways. What clients are you staffed on? You know, things like that, the ways that people can use that.
And your book is full of them. I mean, what kind of lessons about career, about life? I mean, what lessons have you been able to take away from some of these stories? And
yeah, well, thanks so much, Bill. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just that there's cool people all around us mm-hmm. and we don't even know. Yeah. Like we don't even know. And just ask and get them to tell those stories. And it's you share a little bit of yourself, be a little bit vulnerable. Also, I've realized since writing the book, how much more of a leadership book it is than what I thought. And just being a little bit vulnerable and being human just makes you such a much better leader, no matter where you are in the organization, because then critical feedback isn't so critical. You know, it's just a friend pulling a friend aside, just saying, hey, I know you can do better than this, instead of a partner telling a manager, you know, just rah, you know, just berating them. It comes across in a different way. Plus people are more open and more willing to talk to you, tell you the truth, you know, type of thing. And it just, they want to work for you. You become a leader and not a manager. You know, well, where someone wants to follow you instead of they have to.
Yeah, exactly. And that might be, I don't know, that might answer my next question, but I was going to ask, you know, what happens at the intersection of those two things, right? Our careers and our right? How do they kind of play together?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that as a leader, there's that. But even the really cool thing that also too from all the interviews has been just the expertise that people gain from their outside of work passions is how we define expertise is too narrow. When someone says, what's your expertise? So, well, here's my college degree and here's the letters after my name for my certifications. Right. But there's more expertise that you have that others don't. A lot of people have those exact same skill or expertise, if you will. And, you know, but there's expertise that I had as a comedian performing when I worked in the corporate world that other people didn't. So right. When it came to time to give a presentation, you should probably pick the person that does community theater, plays in a band, does spoken word, does comedian, like whatever, something like that. You know, that's the person that should be doing that. When it comes time to staff a project, you know, we just got a microbrew client. Well, what do you know? Joe over here likes to brew his own beer. Maybe he should be staffed on that project. Mm-hmm. You know, because then Joe is hanging out with the coolest people he knows. The client loves it because Joe knows all the words that they're using, all the terminology and why they used a more expensive product to input, you know, into their beer than something else, rather than just someone else that can also do the financial analyst role or whatever.
That's a really interesting take there. Yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks to this whole, I mean, there's a ton of folks talking about competencies, skills that we're going to need going forward, you know, and I'm curious kind of what skills we might all need to bring to the table to, you know, from not necessarily from our education or right. from our work experience, but taking into account all of that stuff. What kind right. of skills could we be applying to our end that might also be helpful in, you know, what we do at the office?
Yeah. I mean, just there's so many different things. I mean, but most importantly, from your end, you get confidence because you've done some things that you're like, oh, wow, I hiked this 10-mile hike, or I, you know, was cycling and my chain broke and then I was able to fix it and finish the race or whatever. And, you know, I've done these things. And so that gives you some confidence. So then when you're in the office, it's a different way. It's a different thing. But you're like, no, I've been through, like, I've run a marathon. That's not fun. About mile 15, I imagine it's brutally painful. And so, like, you're at mile 15 of busy season and you're like, yeah, you know what? I can make it through this, you know, type of a thing. And there's different things that different people get from their end. It's just, don't be afraid to use them in the office. And if you're in a leadership position, don't be afraid to find out what those are so then you can allow your people to use them. I think the number one thing out of all of it is just vulnerability. I mean, just your ability to just be like, you know what? I don't know all the answers, but I know who knows. So there's that. But, you know, just being human and then allowing your people to also be human, I think is the most crucial thing through all of this. And especially through, you know, since March, 2020 with the yeah. everything. So just be human and allow your people to be human.
I'm always kind of amazed at how many of us are reluctant to kind of show that vulnerability, you know? Like we feel like it's a badge of honor of some sort to always feel like we know what to do or have the right answer.
Right.
I mean, probably the best answer I ever got from anybody was in college, a class advisor. You know, I went to him one day and just, I asked him a question and he said, you know what? I don't know, but I'll find out. And I thought,
yeah, wow, there you go.
That's amazing. That's exactly what I needed to know, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, that's the answer, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's great because it's, you don't know, but you know who knows.
Right.
So what's the difference? Like, who cares? Right. You know, it's your ego that gets in the way there. And I think it's easy to hide behind your degrees and certifications because, you're not an outlier then. You're a commodity. We have a bunch of those. Plus, you know, people put stock in the amount of hours and that's how you get paid as well. So, you know, and that's what's sad is, you know, how you get bonused and how you get promoted and all of our education, even continuing education, is so much technical skills. And that study done at Carnegie Institute 102 years ago now in 1980, that found that 15% of your financial success is technical skills. Mm-hmm. And it's like, That's 85%.
Right.
That's like almost the auditor in me is like round up, immaterial difference. Like all of it is interpersonal skills. Right. You know, human engineering, and sure, be good at your job, but that is not what you hang your hat on. You know, like, and especially now, more and more computers are doing those technical skills side of it. Yep. And so that's where, you know, and another important thing too is that your and is kind of your rock. Like, no matter what company you work for or what job you have within that company as you get promoted, like that and is constant. The technology is always changing. Your skills that you use are always changing. What logos on your golf shirt is always changing. Mm-hmm. But what doesn't is you're a painter, you're a pianist, you love horror movies, you know, love to cook. Like whatever your and is, that's always there. And so, you know, it's just mentally, it's just super crucial to not only have that for a break, but just to have that as your go-to of mm-hmm. that's who you are. And that's why in the book I identified them as that, because you know, who knows, over time they might have a different job or, you know, work for a different firm or a different company, but they're always going to be that.
That's always going to be with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
You end the book with a kind of a call of action, of call to action of sorts, you know, to make professionalism weird, which right? I love. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, just make it you. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't one, you know, in the accounting profession, there isn't one way to be successful. There's a billion. I mean, there's a bunch of partners, there's a bunch of CFOs, there's a bunch of controllers, there's a bunch of people that are successful in their careers, and you don't have to be one way to be that. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of us over time, we just let that become what we think we're supposed to be based on a TV show or a movie or a modeling behavior of someone in front of us. And I want you to make it you. You know, for too long, we've let the profession influence who we are and how we act. And that's ridiculous. It's the other way around. You know, the 8% that don't have those outside of work interests have bullied the 92% to believe that you have to act this way. So a lot of people, when they go in the office, they're acting a role in a terrible play. Like, you know, and they're going to all work with one arm tied behind their back. They're going to networking things. They're talking with clients as a shell of who they really are. And that enthusiasm and that animation and that and really, really is crucial to who you are as a person.
Amen. That's great. Who's your white whale in terms of like podcast guests? Anyone you've been dying to have on the show, but haven't
quite nailed down? Yeah, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. He moonlights as a DJ at like hip hop clubs.
No way.
And he's the CEO of Goldman Sachs.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So clearly you can be successful and have an and, mm-hmm. like an and for people to know about it, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah, so that would be pretty awesome to have him on. And also there was a goalie for the Blackhawks a year or two ago, who's a financial analyst at a company. And then he was like their third string.
He was their emergency backup goalie, right? Yeah.
Exactly. He was the emergency goalie and he got called in, got the W. And yeah, so I've reached out to both of them and, you know, maybe now that I've been on your show, I can use that as a way in. So that works. So thanks, Bill.
There you go. Well, listen, John, thanks so much for being here. This has been great. Love the insights. Love the book. Congratulations again. And yeah, thanks again for all your help. And
No, thank you, man. This has been a blast.
Such great stuff there this week. That was my conversation with thought provoker, catalyst for cultural change, and author John Garrett. Learn more at thejohngarrett.com. And don't forget his book, and it's a good one, folks. You'll want to read it. It's called What's Your And? Unlock the Person Within the Professional. You can get it at thejohngarrett.com or at Amazon or, you know, wherever you get your books. And hey, if you're interested, John is going to give a pre-conference comedy performance the day before the start of the 2020 Digital CPA Conference. This is just a great conference, folks. You simply must attend it. John's going to get it kicked off in style. He'll do his thing on Monday, December 7th. The conference gets rolling on Tuesday, December 8th. You can get all the details and register at cpa.com/digital-cpa. Also, don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering those future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's it, gang. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.